I went to seminary with this kid named Matt. He was a couple years behind me, a nice kid, good basketball player. And anyway, he was telling a story about when he was still in college, he was thinking about the priesthood, but he wasn't there yet. Anyway, his parish, they decided to do a day out for the kids. It was maybe the servers and kids involved with this, that, the other thing. They took him to the amusement park, took him on the bus, and then they gave him, you know, you lay of the land, you got to be back here. 5 o'clock, we're leaving from this place. And 5 o'clock comes, and they do their little roll call, and they're missing a kid. And they search the park, and they're pretty thorough, and they just keep looking. They can't find the kid. They're making announcements. The kid doesn't show up. And finally, it's 7 o'clock, and the priest, he's just tired. He says, you know what? We're going to go. We can't hold these other kids back. Their families are waiting. And so he takes his cell phone out, gives it to Matt, and said, I want you to call the kid's parents and tell them that we left him. Can you, I mean, so you left a kid? I mean, only a priest would think that this is a good idea. I think, anyway, no parent would ever be persuaded, but Matt became a priest eventually, and he was using this as an image of the church, that like a bus, or really the church is seen more as a ship, but we shouldn't leave anybody behind. No one is outside the scope of God's love. No one is beyond the periphery of his care. He's compassionate. He loves every single person, especially those who are marginalized. That's why today's gospel is very challenging. Who are the poor and the weak and the hungry and the imprisoned? The people who are sick in our midst that we might be missing. And if we miss them, well, we're missing Christ. And if we miss him, then we won't be ready for eternal life. We don't like to think about judgment, and most of us have felt judged at times too, but it's important for us to meditate on these things, because if our hearts don't grow, we won't have space for Christ. And he's the only one who can save us. He's the only one who is the way to the Father. His life built a bridge from our world to his. And all of our life, we're preparing to cross that bridge to make our Passover to the Lord. Now, we don't like being judged, but we all do it to some degree, I suppose. And we've all felt on what it's like. And we bristle at anybody's judgment, anybody thinking they know us. When we were in college, they took us downtown Minneapolis to meet some of the homeless people. And I was surprised. I mean, I guess I just thought, well, they probably had they got what they had coming to them, right? Something like that. And a lot of these people were really very gifted, very intelligent, had made some terrible decisions and sometimes got in over their head in terms of addiction. But I guess I wasn't ready for the dignity that I saw in them. And then I recognized the narrowness of my own heart. That every one of us, we're going to be challenged by Christ to see him in all of his people. Now, there was a story. I saw this lady being interviewed. She's a homeless woman in New York. And it was a cold night, and they were somebody abandoned a poodle, little guy. And there was a huge group of people trying to rescue this dog and a call of the shelters and the Humane Society. And she said, all this fuss about this little dog. And I was sitting in front of my cardboard box, and not a single person asked me how I was doing. See the blindness of the human heart? We don't like judgment, but it's important for us to think about it, because in the end, we'll be judged by Christ, who is the right person, because he's a divine person. He can handle that job. We can't, but the first thing is not to overdo it or to underdo it, but to find some balance. To overplay it is to make God into a mean cop that's just looking to, well, he's going to catch you, he's going to punish you, and as soon as he does, he's going to be gratified, like somehow God would enjoy putting us in our place. He sent his son to save us. And anyway, those kind of threats, fear is a motivating thing, but it's not the best motivator. When I was a kid growing up, this comedian was talking about he and his brother, they would, at night, they would jump on the bed and make noise. My brother and I never would do that. But anyway, their dad would pound on the wall, hey, quiet! And then they would start up again, and finally they broke the bed, and in comes the dad, and he says, now what happened? And the boy said, well, Dad, we were just hanging out, and the man came in the window, and we started jumping on the bed, and we told him to stop, and he wouldn't, and he broke the bed, and then he left. And the dad looks at his son, he says, son, you know where you go for lying? No, Dad, you go down, and you burn, and your eyes are burning, your hair's burning, And the little boy says, Dad, I don't want to burn, then tell the truth. The man came in the window, Dad. Which, of course, isn't true, right? But even the threat of hellfire sometimes isn't enough to change us. And that's not a card we should play very often. There is a hell, And anyone who wants to go there, God, it would break his heart, but he would allow us to. He gave us a free will after all. Not to underplay it either. Like this gospel is oftentimes read at funerals. I remember a priest told me one time, I only read the first half. I don't want the people to hear the second half. I don't want them to think about judgment. Actually, I do want you to think about judgment, because that's the whole motivating force of God's gospel. He wants us to live a good life. And if we're not to start over, to amend our ways, to repent, to say, Lord, I've not loved you and the poor and those who are downtrodden. I haven't even seen you, and I need to change that. So not to overplay judgment or to underplay it. Secondly, to let Christ play the heavy. He can handle it. He's a good judge. He's a good shepherd. He's all those things that we've been told from the time we were little. And in the end, he's God's son, a Messiah. He knows how to handle sinners. He goes into the house of a tax collector, Zacchaeus, and he says, hey, I want to eat with you. And Zacchaeus is so moved that he changes his life. He meets a woman at the well, and she says later, come and meet a guy that knows me. He knows my brokenness, and he didn't condemn me. He loved me in a way that gives me hope that I could change, I could live a good life. He knows how to play that part. Let him do it in our life. Let him be the judge. But that doesn't mean we should abdicate. Sometimes we have to say something. If you're a parent, you have to correct. If you're a teacher, you have to admonish. As a priest, we have to call people on. But discern, pray, ask God to give you the right words, because sometimes we're not the right person. I was asked recently to write to a pro-abortion politician who happens to be Catholic. And I said, okay. But I set the envelope on my desk with the name and address. That took a few weeks just to make sure that, Lord, what do you want me to say? Because I'm not the judge. It's a terrible thing that we could take the life of an innocent person. And I know a lot of people have made those decisions, and they're sorry. And the people that advocate for it don't understand or don't want to understand the Holocaust that abortion is. Eventually, I felt moved by God, and he gives us the words. We're just the pen. He provides the inspiration. Let him be the judge. Let him help us to know what to say and when to say it or not to say it at all. So the judgment, right? It's going to come, and we all are practicing. We're given lots of opportunities. You know where you can practice to meet Jesus and others? Our families. We love our families, but they have all their own strengths and weaknesses. We were just home, most of us, I hope, with people that can stretch us. When I was little, we used to always go to Grandma's. I have a cousin named Steve. I never liked him, and I guess it was mutual. We punched each other in the face so many times. That's why I look like this today. But eventually, somehow we got over it. Somehow we get along fine. He sends me a Christmas card every year. I don't know that I send him one back. But anyway, the idea is that our families are a preparation. Do we learn to love them and pray for them? Because in the end, God made them, and he put us together for his own reason. And each of us is invited to see Christ in those closest to us. Another friend named Matt. So the first one, he's a priest now, and leave no one behind, that image of the church. I hope we don't leave anybody behind. By the way, he works with the gay community. Another friend of mine, and high school kid, same name, Matt. We were pretty good friends in high school. He was a little different. Some of my friends said he's gay. I have never really knew what that all meant, but anyway, he was raised, his dad was killed when he was little, and his mom and his sisters raised him, so I thought, well, he's just a little bit more effeminate, I suppose. Anyway, we were good friends through high school, and we went our separate ways for college. He had a lot of struggles, got into chemicals, a lot of depression, a lot of hurt. But eventually, he kind of got his life back on the right track. And one day, I called him because I was going to Rome, and I wasn't going to be back for 2 years. And so I said, hey, Matt, I'd like to come and visit. And he was really kind of standoffish. And I said, well, is there a problem? He said, well, my roommates, they use drugs. Okay, I don't, but I'm not going to hang out with them. I'll hang out with you. And still, there was some hesitancy, and he said, Sam, I'm gay. Oh, well, that's not my thing, but anyway, I'd still like to see you. And thank God he said yes. I think my parents must have raised me to say that when people have struggles, pray for them, love them. You can't fix them. That's between those people and God. We had a great visit, and I'm glad that I did it, because that Christmas, just 4 months later, after we'd seen each other, when I talked to my mom, she said, your friend Matt, He fell back into those chemicals and he died just a few days before Christmas. It took me a long time to find his tomb, which is down in Racine. I've never been able to find his mom. I think about her all the time. I know that she's still in this world. Judgment. I think about Matt. I feel his presence. I hope and pray that he's at rest. Each one of us was made by God to live with him. And in the fullness of time, he sent his son to love us, to forgive us, to pay a price we can't pay, and to prepare a place we don't deserve. He is God, our Christ and our King. We can trust him and love him and know that he loves us.